9 o'clock hour. Man. Oh, boy. Oren, this conversation about Spencer Strider, it's got me in my feels, man. It's just so sad to watch because you know how good he is. And to see this version of him, again, if you missed it last segment, in his last three starts, 11 innings pitched, 20 earned runs, and 30 hits allowed. Wow. All right, from one team that is unfortunately struggling to another on Chris Thomas tonight, that is our Five Stripes. Let's welcome in our buddy Jason Longshore on the WadeFord.com hotline, United analyst at Longshoe on social media. Jason, we had a couple of good matches, a win and a draw. They were looking good, and then not so much against Colorado. What happened?
Yeah, not so much. I also do like that 9 o'clock on Mondays is soccer time and Bubba Sparks time. It's a good combination.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, just it wasn't good enough in Colorado. You look at how this game goes. The first half, I mean, it was even. I don't think Atlanta was by far the better team, but they were fine. They were good against a good Colorado team, especially at home. And the second half wasn't at the same standard. You know, we've talked about the new guys that have come in, and Juan Bettercall is one of those who I think has a lot to give this team. I really like what he can be with this group, but he gets caught in a dribbling situation and gives up a penalty, which is kind of the thing you can't do against Colorado in the second half. You can't fall behind this team because, one, they're a good defensive team and they're comfortable without the ball. Two, the altitude's going to affect you at least a little bit. I mean, Ronald Hernandez kind of laughed when asked about the altitude after the game, said it's not Bolivia, where he's played many times during his career with the Venezuelan national team, but it will take a little out of you. So it just makes it harder to come back in games. And then you give up that third goal, which is pretty much the death knell for you. I liked Steven Alzate in the game, one of the other newcomers. I really like what he can give you, but he's only about 20-25 minutes fit right now. So you're not going to see him in a position to start probably for another couple of weeks. Bettercall's getting closer. We saw an AME tie go 90, and I thought was pretty solid in this match. But ultimately, Colorado's a better team on the night.
What were they able to do in that match against Atlas a couple of weeks ago where they scored four times that they haven't been able to do over the last two?
Yeah, I think you do have to start to look at the striker position, and Latte Lott has just really struggled to get things going right now. And, you know, Alexi Maranchuk has been brilliant. I think Miguel Almiron has been pretty good. Zabalob Janica had been on a nice run of form recently, but not on Saturday. And I think that battle for the left wing spot right now between him and Luke Brennan has probably edged ahead after this match in Colorado, where Sabo was really even with Brennan up until that point, maybe slightly ahead. But Brennan has been consistently good even off the bench, and Sabo struggled in Colorado. But you've got to get something going in the attack, and you've got to get something going with the striker. And it's a problem that you don't have Jamal Tiare at the moment to kind of push Latte Lott and give you potentially some starts and let Latte Lott come off the bench a little bit to try to get some confidence for him. But it's a tough spot for a player who, you know, obviously feels the pressure of being a very large transfer in, a player who is dealing with big expectations and not meeting those this season. But also the flip side of that is the battle that he's dealing with physically, because, you know, when you come in the off season window for MLS and you're coming off of a European season, you hit this portion of the calendar where, you know, he started his season with Middlesbrough. Preseason started last July, so July of 24. Game started in August of 24. And he hasn't had a break. He went right up until the end of the winter window, came to Atlanta, came in Atlanta's preseason. And now you're starting to really hit that wall physically where it's hard to play for a year and a half with no offseason. And that's kind of where he is. So when you're struggling for confidence and physically, you're probably pretty shattered at the moment. that's a really tough combination for a striker.
You mentioned some of the new faces getting involved. How much of the game plan will be to make sure that those guys are in the mix as much as possible at their respective positions to get a good look at them for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I think that's a key. I mean, we've talked about it. The playoffs now are very unlikely. Every game, every time you're on the field, whistle to whistle, you're going to try to win the match. There's no illusions about that. But it's going to be hard to get into the postseason, borderline impossible. So you have to get something out of these games. And I think you do want to see Mikhai and Better Call together. Sion Gregerson has been playing better, and that's good because he's missed most of the season due to injury. You know, he's been able to finish games, and he's been able to give you some decent performances. So he's going to push those two for starting time, and that's good. Competition at center back is going to be a good thing between those three, but I think ideally you'd like to see Mikhai and Better Call get some minutes together. I mentioned Alzate. He's a really impressive player the more that I'm seeing of him, and fitness is going to be a challenge for him. You want to get him maybe up to full fitness by the time you get into the international break coming up. But I really want to see the pairing with him and Sleash, because I think Bartosz, as I've said to you a few times here, I think he's been Atlanta United's best player. And it's not all about goals and assists to be the best player. I think Sleash has been just outstanding for the majority of the season. And I want to see what the chemistry looks like with him and Alzate, because I think they do have similarities, which is good, but I think they complement one another in a way that maybe Mikhai and Better Call do at center back, whereas Mikhai maybe a little bit more of the gritty defender, a little more physical, Better Call a little bit better on the ball. I think with Sleash and Alzate, it's kind of the same thing. I think Sleash is a great ball winner. He's industrious. He runs more than anybody else in the team, sprinting and just distance as well. And then Alzate gives you a little extra something on the ball, a little more quality on the ball in that position. And he's quick. He's direct in wanting to get the ball forward. I like what I've seen from him in limited minutes, and I want to see the pairing with him and Sleash from the start. It's probably going to be a couple games till we get there. I mean, alongside that, I think you're looking at guys like Will Riley and Luke Brennan to see what they can do in terms of where they fit into the roster for next season. Are they guys who are going to play a good bit, or are they guys who maybe you would look to do like what you did with Noah Cobb and loan to go play more and see if they can turn into something coming back as a starter? That's the checklist that you have to have the rest of this season, because games are going to get played, and you got to get something out of them to help you be in a better position for 26.
Speaking of getting something out of the games, how about on Sunday? What would 3 mean against a eminently beatable Toronto club?
Yeah, it keeps you alive. And I think the biggest thing you want is to build that confidence in a guy like Latte Lott and Miguel Almiron. You want to start to get them on the score sheet on a regular basis. And, you know, with Latte Lott, it's this kind of balancing act of you don't want to put pressure on him, but you also want to start to feed him and maybe force the ball to him a little bit and try to get him going. Again, that's going to help you in the long run. Also, like I said, I think Luke Brennan is another one who, against Toronto, I think he can be a big, big factor. He's relentless on the dribble. He always makes things happen, and he does all the right things off the ball as well, with his runs trying to get open when you're in an attacking situation. But he's also a gritty defender. He'll drop back, and he'll help out on the defensive side. So there's ways you can beat this Toronto team. I think we saw the match that was pretty even up in Toronto. It's been the conversation with this Atlanta United team all season long. You look at it on paper, they should beat Toronto. Current form, maybe a little more even, but the talent you think has to win out at some point. And if it doesn't, then maybe you have to go get different talent in the offseason.
Before I let you go, when you watch Ronnie Dyla on the sidelines over the last couple of months, is the same fervor and enthusiasm still there that was at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is when I get a chance to talk to him. It is when he does media. I think it is in general, but yeah, he's frustrated. And I understand that, because I think you saw early on the frustration with trying to get the players accustomed to playing in a different way than they had under two previous managers. You know, remember, the core of this team was there last year at the beginning. So Gonzalo Pineda had them playing one way that was very possession heavy. Rob Valentino had them playing a different way that was more defensive, behind the ball, looked to counter. So I think it took him longer than maybe he thought it would to get them to buy in to being a team that would press high, a team that wanted the ball, but also more than anything, wanted to get into the attacking half quickly. And where they want their possession is in the attacking half, not slow build up to control a game. They want to control the game by field position, where it's being played. They want to be in the attacking half. And it took a while. And I think then we started to see that run in the summer where the performances were good, but the results weren't coming. And it's just so frustrating for a manager where you can see the progress, but it doesn't show up in the standings. And I think he's struggling with that, as you know, all of us are around the team right now. It's the performances have improved as the year has gone on, with Colorado being an exception. That was a step back, but the results haven't matched the improvement on the field and performances. And you just kind of have to keep your head down and keep grinding, but also trying to find those things that you can build around. And guys like Brennan, guys like the newcomers who have come in, guys like that, that can maybe give you a different sort of spark. Lean into that and see what you can get out of it.
When can we hear you this week?
Atlanta soccer tonight, tomorrow after you're done. And then the intersection on Thursday, same time after you finish up. And we'll be talking everything Atlanta United, Atlanta United 2, a really good win for them last night. That'll be on Atlanta soccer tonight, tomorrow. And we'll be talking about the Atlanta Dream, who've been killing it as of late on the intersection with me and Noel. That's been a fun conversation where, you know, like you and I have talked about, the Braves have struggled this summer. Atlanta United struggled. We're excited about the Falcons coming up, but the Dream has been a really fun team to watch, and I hope people are paying attention.
Yeah, second place, if I'm not mistaken. I think
yeah.
they're doing really, really well right now. Good point. All right, Jason, we'll be catching you throughout the week, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Jason Longshore there. Well, let's get back to our Falcons conversation now. Yeah, Braves suck. 7-1, they're down in the top of the sixth inning. Strider, again, just inexplicably awful at this point. We'll dive into that later on in the Atlanta baseball postgame show. But coming up next, Joe Patrick, Boots on the Ground Report. Are you worried about Jalen Walker? We'll find out if we should be next. Ah, yes, when you hear this music, you know what time it is. There is so much going on at Flowery Branch that we need to discuss. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Let's waste no time and head out to the very busy WadeFord.com hotline with our man Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football, the new podcast covering all things Falcons and NFL. Joe, we got so much to get into. Let's make sure we hit all of it. First and foremost, what's going on with Jalen Walker? What is the level of concern?
I would say it's moderately concerning. Not necessarily this particular injury. It doesn't sound like it's too bad. Raheem Morris said that he suffered a bit of a groin injury, like literally in the last play of practice at the joint practices against the Titans on that Wednesday, the final day before the preseason game. So he was obviously held out of that game. Raheem said he was not going to be on the field today, though surprisingly he was on the field participating, or at least on the field for individual drills. You know, not a participant, obviously, in the contact stuff, but they said that they want to integrate him back into the practice on Wednesday. So it seems like he maybe is already ahead of schedule on that front. I just say the concerning part about it is that he's now had a couple of these issues. I believe it was a hamstring previously that was holding him out for about a week. So a little concerning about the soft tissue stuff that's happening with him and maybe some other players as well. You can kind of see it cropping up around the team, but you know, good news in the sense that he's likely going to be back. And I feel totally confident that he's at least going to be available for the team for that week one game.
Okay. So with that, they've made a bunch of roster moves over the last couple of days. Let's just go over them. Emory Hunt, no longer on the squad, replaced by Ben DiNucci, who I'm assuming will get some action in the final preseason game on Friday. You bring in another edge rusher. You bring in some help in the secondary. Are these all just minor moves, Joe, or anything raise your eyebrow in terms of something that could have a significant impact on the squad?
Some of them are minor. I would say most of them are minor. I think at this time you're just trying to figure out how to get yourself situated to get through this next game, because while there's been lots of debate about players not playing in preseason games, it's this third preseason game where I think you're really going to see even more guys sit out, and that means that they have to have some players who are up and available to play. And it's not just, obviously, that's kind of demeaning to say that you're just signing players to, like, be warm bodies to go out there on the field. I'm sure that there is interest from the Falcons in seeing what these players can offer, and that's the reason why they sign them and bring them into the camp and bring them in, and, you know, likely some of them are going to play in the preseason game on Friday. But I would have to imagine that that's mainly just Terry Fondo calls these kinds of like points of contact that you have with players, whether that's in, you know, the draft process or when you bring them in for workouts or whatever it is. So it just gives them an opportunity to look at them. And if they do want to place them on the practice squad, even probably not even for right now, but for later on, then that's a possibility. I would say specifically to get into some of these guys, like Ben DiNucci, the quarterback, he is just coming in to help this team get through this game again, this preseason game where Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix Jr. will not be playing. Perkins, the defensive end, I think is the one that's most intriguing in terms of being a player that, you know, we could see on the practice squad down the line, perhaps. And I think maybe most of all, you know, C.J. Henderson, who the team signed last week. This wasn't one of the transactions from today, but that's a high profile, you know, player at one point, at least, having been a high draft pick, a higher draft pick than A.J. Terrell was. They came out in that same draft. And I think he's a player who, hard to say he's going to make the roster at this point, given like he just had his first practice today. But I do think that there's a reason why they wanted to go out and sign a player like him, which is maybe because there is an opportunity for a corner with some, not necessarily he's a big body corner, but he's a little bit longer than some of the other guys they have, like Natron Brooks, Clark Phillips, those types of players. So I think there's an opportunity for a cornerback of that profile to ultimately be on this team. I wouldn't be surprised, would be shocked if he's not on the practice squad, actually, C.J. Henderson. And I think he's got a chance to be on the 53-man roster.
Could that come at an expense of a guy like Clark Phillips?
Yeah, I think it could. And in fact, at this point, I would kind of already say that Clark Phillips is on the outside looking in of this whole situation in the secondary. I actually just kind of struggle to see him making the team at this point because he hasn't played, Chris. You know, like he just has not been on the field really since they got into a lot of the competitive portion of this training camp, which was, you know, kind of last week with the joint practices. And he also did not participate in the intra-squad scrimmage that the team had the week before that. He got, because that's when he suffered the rib injury that he currently has, is right before that intense scrimmage. And so he hasn't been involved in some of the best opportunities for him to really, you know, put on that competitive reps on tape. So tough for a player like him in this circumstance, but, you know, it is what it is. And it also doesn't help him the fact that, you know, it's a different coaching staff than the one that initially drafted him. So he doesn't kind of have that pull with the staff either.
What did you make of Zach Robinson's comments about why QB1 and QB2 will not be seeing any preseason action?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of the same of what we've heard from the staff. And, you know, this is kind of led by Raheem Morris. You never know if, like, different coaches kind of have different perspectives but have to, you know, obviously follow the lead of what the head coach thinks is best strategically for the team at the time. I would say this, Chris, you know, just from having been out of practice today, I tweeted out earlier today that it was, like, a sloppy practice. I would stand behind that, at least offensively, that – you know, there was just, you know, some passes that you would expect to be completed that weren't at times. And you could just see guys just kind of dragging out there. It was, I should say that it's the first, well, not the first practice in the heat, but it was, they moved practice back an hour today. So it was a scattered, you know, time of day on top of it just being a hotter day in general. And it literally looked like the guys were feeling it. And so when it comes to preseason games, you know, it's the one thing I was looking at, again, on Twitter earlier today, Chris, and I just get this sense that, like, a lot of fans think that if they're not playing in preseason games, it means they're not getting work. You know, these guys are working extremely hard every day, and these reps that they're getting, I know it's called practice, but I mean, these are reps that go on film that determine whether they're going to make the team or not. And these are professionals that we're talking about. So they take it very, very seriously. And I think that just kind of gets underlooked at a little bit. And I think that when you think about, like, with Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris value, you know, I think that, you know, they put a lot of value in these snaps that these players are having at practice. And so that's what they're going to be judged on. And that's just the way it is here in Atlanta under this regime.
Talking all things Falcons with our insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football, his podcast covering all things Falcons and NFL. When you guys put out your post-practice reports, which are very helpful, by the way, you, Mark Raimondi, Taren Walk, and you highlight the completion percentages for each quarterback during practice that you chart, I have noticed it's not alarming, Joe, but just there's been a couple of times where it's looked like Penix has missed more than a handful of throws. Is that something that has sparked your interest at all, or is it not a big deal?
I think it's less of a deal than some people, but it's not a no deal. You know, like I think there's definitely throws that he misses, and like today, you know, again, when I'm thinking about like the sloppiness of practice, I'm thinking about a couple throws that were there for the taking that just were not hit. I would say, though, that it's, you know, part of the reason why Penix's, I think, completion percentage is a little bit lower than you would hope to see out of a starting quarterback, even though some days it's very high. But like today, I think Mark Raimondi had him charged at 10 for 17, for example, which is, again, not terrible, but maybe you could have, you know, reasonably expected maybe slightly higher percentage. It's because he's taking downfield shots. Like, this guy is trying to push the ball downfield and get big hits with his receivers. And the other aspect of this is that, from what I can recall, I think he's still only thrown one interception in this entire training camp. It was a red zone. Red zone drill and just a underthrown ball. But other than that, like, I can't remember him really throwing many. There might be one more than that that I'm not thinking of, but I say that just to say that even while the completion percentage may not be what you would expect in some practices, it's not like he's really putting the ball in harm's way. And certainly I can't think of many times where there's been just like dropped interceptions against the defense that he's throwing to. So yeah, while, you know, that is what it is, the completion percentage, I'm not overly fussed about it because I feel like he's still, you know, leading the offense in a responsible way. And he does hit on some of these big passes, which, Chris, like, you know, I've been covering this team since 2022. So I've seen Marcus Mariota, Desmond Ridder, and Kirk Cousins basically take the helm at quarterback for this team in training camp. And none of those three were pushing the ball downfield as much or hitting downfield as much, obviously, as Michael Penix has this camp.
So you're talking about the noodle arm quitter, DoorDash Dez, and the broke down liar, according
that's
to our.
That's just mean, Chris. That's mean.
That's according to our good friend John Fricke. Speaking of mean, I don't want to be mean, but backup offensive line, Joe, not good.
Yeah. And this is where I have major question marks as to, you know, who is going to be carried on this 53-man roster, and maybe how many players are going to be on this 53-man roster that are not currently in this training camp right now? Because I was talking to, you know, one of our own, Mike Johnson, during the preseason game. I was texting with him during that game on Friday night, and I was saying that, you know, I feel like the team could take their chance with just taking a reserve offensive lineman at every spot, basically beyond Storm Norton. You got Storm Norton, who's your swing tackle, even though he's been injured for the last couple of weeks with a unspecified lower body injury. And then beyond that, it's a lot of guys who have kind of been around for a while and not seemingly have progressed like we have seen Ryan Neuzel progress. That's kind of the development that you hope to see out of your reserve offensive lineman, that you can't reasonably expect every one of them, first of all, even has the opportunity to like get in games and actually supplant the players ahead of them. But I don't know. I guess you would just at least expect more from them in some of these preseason games to do some of the basics a little bit better, like get some push in the run game, especially when that's like, you know, the MO of what this football team wants to be. So I'm curious to know how many, 53-man roster spots they're going to reserve for some of those guys instead of just letting them go to waivers and then claiming them back onto the practice squad, which I'm sure they would do with quite a few of them, versus going out and, getting some guys who get dropped from other teams around the league.
So it looks like Casey Washington is a guy that's really been focused on a lot. Is it something where you feel like if Darnell Mooney can't go week one, like this guy's going to step in and get legitimate reps?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I would expect that Casey Washington, if Darnell Mooney is unavailable to play week one against Tampa Bay, which we don't know, but it certainly is within the realm of possibility as of now. I mean, like his status is very much up in the air, given the lack of, transparency that we've had with regards to the injury, because the team isn't under no obligation to provide injury reports on their players or timetables and whatnot. So that being said, yeah, I mean, he is asserting himself as the X receiver for this team, in Mooney's absence. And so if Mooney's unavailable to go, he would absolutely be on the field for, a vast majority of the snaps, if not every single offensive snap, to be perfectly honest with you, Chris. I think it's worth specifying, like, at the receiver position, there's clearly defined roles. I know, like, you just kind of think about receivers as being receivers and, one of them can play all of them, but there really are certain traits that the team looks for in each of the different roles. Those roles being the X receiver, the Z receiver, and the S receiver, which can also be a tight end, the S. But, in the X, that's what Darnell Mooney is, and that's what Casey Washington would be. They want speed off the line. They want to be able to run vertically, and then they want to be able to separate off of one cut, whether that be on a dig, a post, a corner route and out, those types of things. The Z receiver, for example, like Drake London, they want him to be able to do a little bit more in terms of like finding the open gaps, and they move him in motion on line of scrimmage. And so those just take different qualities. And I think that Casey Washington, when you look at what they're looking for in the X, he certainly does provide that athleticism, the explosiveness off the line of scrimmage. And I got to say, Chris, like I see him getting open a lot in practice. We've seen Penix connect with him a lot. But again, one of those incompletions I was thinking of today was just like, it looked to me like he had Casey Washington open downfield, just overthrows him a little bit, and you just hope to see that connection happen more often. But they certainly have been connecting, and it's one of the reasons why Casey Washington has found himself in the spot that he's in.
All right, so before I let you go, we raved about Kyle Pitts at the start of camp. Haven't heard much the last couple of weeks. What's he looked like? Is he keeping up with the regiment that we saw him doing at the beginning of camp, or is he falling off?
Well, you wouldn't have heard too much kind of like screaming from the mountaintops from yours truly here. Not because I think that Pitts is a bad player necessarily, but I just always felt like he's still going to be, I think, the same role in this offense that he's had. And like his attributes have not necessarily changed. And I think that the attributes that he has is the straight line speed. He does have an ability to, when he is able to catch the ball in some shorter routes and some space, he has some ability to stiff arm defenders and then pick up yardage after the catch, which is really nice. But in general, I never saw him as being this like high volume tight end target like we see some of the top tight ends in the NFL being. And I know that maybe that it was thought that that would change when Michael Penix said, we got the ball to him a lot today after that first day of training camp. But generally speaking, I'm more of a I'll wait and believe it when I see it. And ultimately, what I've seen so far in this training camp is him pretty much being the same guy. I will say this, though, Chris. He does seem to be targeted more specifically in the red zone, which I think is good. It makes a lot of sense with a guy that has his size. You get him matched up against safeties who are smaller and just can't deal with him as easily. Have noticed him catching more of those types of balls in the back of the end zone. We saw him catch one against the Tennessee Titans, a nice one-handed catch that he was able to corral in. So I do think that there's some optimism for him in those situations.
Did I read the schedule correctly? You and Stakey on a Thursday, fastest 2 hours in sports? Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
You better buckle up, my friend.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. He lost his laptop last time we did the show on last Thursday. So it can only go up from there, I would hope, for his sake.
What, how did that – so he lost – were like all of his notes and like everything, so he was flying blind?
Well, this, in the most steak fashion ever, he is apparently on his phone like leaving a breakfast or something and puts his laptop on top of his car and, while he's getting in, and then just drives away with it on top of his car. And then the laptop was like on the middle of Peachtree Road.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
But it was intact, apparently. So
that's Is that right? Oh, wow. Yeah. You would have figured that thing would have been goner. Like, I would have lost all
well,
the
farm. It was
the
not in great condition, but the let's say the hard drive was still intact, like the black box, basically.
Oh, my goodness.
The black box of his laptop was recovered.
Well, Godspeed, my friend, and I'll be listening, and we'll check in later in the week. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Fastest 2 hours in sports with Joe Patrick on Thursday. Oh, that'll be good radio. That'll be good radio. We'll listen. I'll listen. You'll listen. We'll all listen. Listen to this. All 30 MLB announcing teams were ranked. Where did the Braves come in? I'll tell you next. Last chance for romance on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you till the top of the hour, and then the Atlanta baseball postgame show immediately following the last out of every home game. Oren, they're making this one interesting. It's now 10-5 going into the top of the seventh inning. Bats coming alive in this one. Harris homers again. Profar homers again.
How about those guys?
They've been hot.
Yeah, they have been.
They've been really good the last couple of weeks. So it's 10-5. We'll see if they can make another late inning rally. Speaking of, how good do you think Brandon Gaudin and CJ Nitkowski are? I think they're good. I think they're really good.
You find out the real sort of metal of a broadcasting crew when they're either like in a blowout or in the midst of a season that has no promise, no optimism.
Oh,
whatsoever.
What a coinkydink.
Hey, there you go.
We have been beating one of those. Awful Announcing did a poll that got 32,000 votes. So good job out of them to get that many people engaged. And they ranked all 30 MLB announcing teams. Now, Oren, have you seen this list? He has not. Okay. So I'm going to ask you where you think CJ Nitkowski and Brandon Gaudin rank out of the 30 MLB teams. Again, over 30,000 people voted in this poll. And then we'll discuss if we think it's justified or not. Where do you think they came in?
So Braves country is strong.
It is.
And when there's an online poll, they get to clicking. So I'm going to say they rank in the top 10. I'm going to say 7th.
Higher.
11th?
Higher.
17th?
13th.
13th.
I think that is way too high.
Really? Huh, that's surprising to me.
That's really high, I think.
They're 13th.
They're really good. Brandon is really funny. And he adds like a real bite and wit to the broadcast. CJ's really good as the analyst. And I was surprised to see 13th for your Atlanta Braves broadcasting team. I was a little surprised. I thought they'd be higher. I don't know if I thought necessarily they'd be top five because, Oren, there's a lot of legacy booths.
Yeah, you got
like in New York.
New York, both teams in New York.
Boston.
Yeah.
You know who was number one, if you had to take a guess? I was shocked.
Huh. If it's shocking, then it's got to be somebody off the beaten path, like maybe like a Seattle.
That's a good guess. But they just lost their guy because he went from the only reason I know this is because I'm a Yankees fan. They took Dave Sims out of the Mariners TV booth
and put
him with the Yankees. The San Diego Padres.
Really?
Finished number one. ahead of who everybody thinks I think would be number one, which is the Mets. They have the New York, if you guys aren't aware, I know most of you are. The New York Mets have an unhealthy obsession with their broadcast crew. Because I got to be honest, Oren, and I'm not just saying this because I grew up a Yankees fan. To me, I don't get the hype. Like, yes, Gary Cohen is an awesome play-by-play guy.
Maybe it's just like the weird sort of, I don't know what's going on in modern America / sarcasm from Keith Hernandez.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's just,
maybe it's the pop culture references. I don't know about the Keith Hernandez thing.
I hear, if you listen to a Mets game on the Mets broadcast, I don't know why anyone in this listening audience would, but growing up in New York, I heard my fair share of games. It's a lot of, huh, yeah, you know what, Gare? That's a good point. Yeah, Ronnie. You good call on the cutter there. You knew he was going to toss that. Like, I just don't – I don't hear a lot of enthusiasm and excitement. Maybe that's exactly what the Mets fan wants because they're a miserable bunch there in Queens. But I don't know, man. I don't get the hype. Yankees finished, like, 25th in this list, Oren. So, not a lot of Michael K. love on this list. But, yeah, San Diego Padres, Don Orsillo, Mark Grant, Jesse Agler, and our guy Tony Gwynn Jr. This is from the article. We have a new top booth. A significant part of its success was due to the spectacular 1,100 votes it received. 1,100 A votes out of 1,500 votes. So they were asked to rank like A, B, C, D, or F. Grant has been on the call since 1996, while Orsillo has been there since moving over from the Red Sox in 2016. Interesting. But again, I think our Braves, though, I think they got snubbed. I really do. I think 13 is way too high. I really, really love that booth. Interesting to see. Maybe next year they can crack the top 10. You know what the White Sox just did, Oren? They cracked on another run. It's now 11-5 in the top of the 7.
Yeah, Kyle Teal home run.
I mean, what are we doing? By the way, if you're wondering what happened, Strider gave up 7. Austin
Cox. Seven.
Yeah,
seven.
And if you missed the big stat, it's 11 innings pitched, 30 hits, and 20 earned runs in his last 3 starts. 3. That's right. So he's averaged 3 2/3 innings pitched, 10 hits, and 7 earned runs over his last 3 starts. Unbelievable. What are you going to do? Oren and I talked about it earlier. I think you got 3 doors, Braves country, and we'll elaborate once the postgame show gets rocking and rolling. Stick with him. If he's trying to figure something out, I don't know. Is he healthy? I don't know. I think all of these things need to be asked. You put him in the bullpen. You say, listen, we'll let you try to figure this thing out. Maybe you get a couple of reps as a closer, see what that looks like. Take all the focus of trying to get him prepared to throw 75, 80, 90 pitches. Say, just go throw gas, kid, and go strike people out. Or you sit him. Say, Spencer, we can't continue to run you out there like this. It's too damaging for us. It's too damaging for you. Let's focus on 2026. I think that might be what they need to do. What do you think? You can hit me up at C Thomas Radio and let me know your thoughts. All right. Let's finish up with some. Oren, I was trying to get to this audio at like 6 o'clock when the show started.
Yeah, the first thing, give me the show sheet. Like, hey, we're going to start off with this audio in the first segment.
And we just got rolling.
Did not happen.
We just got rolling and it didn't happen. All right. Let's hear from Zach Robinson before we get out of here. Let's close up shop. Oren, let's start with the one why the team is comfortable with Penix not taking a preseason snap. We'll start with that one because obviously that's the biggest pressing issue right now. Is it was announced today, took a bunch of your phone calls during the show, that Michael Penix Jr., Kirk Cousins will not be seeing any preseason action. This was our OC explaining why.
Yeah, I think when you look around the league, it seems like it's pretty split, you know, 50-50 in terms of guys that the teams that want to play their guys versus not. That's obviously the decision that we've made here to let those guys just get all their work in, you know, practice, which, like I mentioned, I think 2 weeks ago, we're getting a lot better looks and work versus our defense in practice as opposed to some of these preseason looks that you get versus kind of vanilla looks. So our pass rush does a great job of simulating what it should feel like. Obviously, we're not hitting the quarterback, but you feel the bodies around you. You feel the same feelings that you do if you were, you know, in a live game action. So have no problem with those guys being ready to go. I think even Mike mentioned, like, hey, there's no preseason in college. You just roll the ball out and play week one. And so we expect those guys to be ready to go. And like I said, the work that we've got against our defense and Ra's ability to kind of simulate those situations, whether it's the Titan practices, the scrimmages, all those have been really positive, and that's been those guys' kind of game work.
Okay. All right. Well, that's your decision, Coach, and you will reap the benefits of it or you will not come week one against Tampa. He was also talking about how the first-team offense has had really good looks in camp and what that's been like, and he's, again, just justifying why they're not going to play.
It's been a really, really encouraging camp, especially from the ones, like I said, they're getting a ton of good work, and then the twos just got to keep building and keep stacking to see, you know, who ultimately ends up making this roster. And the practice squad is, as you guys know, I mean, those guys are going to be called upon at some point in this season, so those guys are just as important.
All right. I don't, you know, Oren, it's like you talk about it, but ultimately at the end of the day, the team is going to do what they feel is best for the organization, the same way they said it about Kirk Cousins and why they haven't, you know, just dumped him for nothing at this point. The team feels just as strongly, clearly about this. I disagree, but that's why I'm a talk show host and not an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Makes sense. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Braves are still in action, so as soon as that game comes to an end, we'll get you the Atlanta baseball postgame show. But coming up next, college football. What's going on at Michigan? Y'all see this over the weekend? $20 million fine? We'll welcome in our buddy Ian Valentino, A to Z Sports, to break that down and more next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.